Howdy, everybody. My name is Silas Albright, and it is my pleasure to welcome you and everyone listening to the first ever episode of the Fooling Around podcast with my good buddy Lightning Wells.
Glad to have you today here, Silas.
It's good to be here. It's been a long time in the making. Glad we're finally sitting down to do it.
Yeah, me too.
So just to kind of set the scene here, we're out here just across the Edgecombe County line here in rural eastern North Carolina. It's home to me and Lightning. I'm from just up the road in the Fountain, and which is Pitt County, of course. And we go way back. I'm 25 years old now. I've been around Lightning my whole life. I grew up on his children's album, especially Jump Little Children Jump. I got a lot of good memories listening to that. And I'm just so happy we're finally doing this. It's something I've been thinking about doing for a really long time. We've been talking about it since before Lightning's recent album even released, and it's been a few months since that came out, and it's really good. We're going to talk to you about it today. It's an all-ukulele compilation. It spans over 30 years from 1987 to 2017, and it's got a bunch of different Lightning and uke. A lot of them are previously unreleased studio recordings, and then some are from other various concerts and festivals. Really showcases Lightning's talent and grasp of the ukulele and all the different styles he plays. It's a delight to listen to. It's a very soothing sound. Always puts me in a good mood, so definitely check it out. You can pick up the CD through Lightning himself. He's got copies, so hit him up. Or you can get it online through the RA Fountain General Store for $12, which I will put a link to in the description. So, yeah, check it out. And another thing I wanted to mention, so we've got a pretty good interview for you. Lightning kind of talks about how he started the uke, and you'll hear what the interview is about. But, yeah, stick around for after the interview for a taste of the album, too, because we got a really nice recording of Lightning playing Fooling Around, the song that inspired it all, the album and this podcast, or the titles at least, but... But all right, that's enough for me. Without further ado, here it is, folks. So when did you get your first uke? You've been playing it as long as I've known you.
I always had one around the house, like a lot of teenagers. I remember a lot of girls, young girls especially, always had a uke in their house, a cheap uke. Played around the campfire, stuff like that. Yeah, we had one to bang on around the house, but I bought a Martin in the early 80s, and I've got a nice deal on it, and I wanted to incorporate it in my blues act and do a couple of songs on the uke. And then during the 90s, I kind of really got into it, yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So, yeah, I started playing in the 90s, like seriously. I was doing a blues gig down in Charleston, South Carolina, and this girl came in with a little sundress carrying. She says, "You play the ukulele?" I went, "Yeah." So she said, "Do you play some uke?" And I said, "I got one with me. Yeah, I'll do that." And she was completely in the uke. Her name was Sandy Hines. She was the ukulele lady from Charleston. And it just got me really going on the uke. It's like I went and, played it every day after that during the 90s. I learned a whole bunch of songs. I started taping them. But at the same time, I have a blues-playing woman friend from... Seattle, Washington, Del Rey, really great player, plays a resonator guitar, really phenomenal musician, and she met Sandy also, and she got her started on uke, and Del Rey has a metal resonator uke, and had developed her own style, so Sandy influenced her to get into uke, too, and she's taken a different direction than I did. She plays with finger picks, and she does... pretty complex, raggy-type pieces. I'm more into the songs. I like the old songs from the 1920s, and I like to learn the verses that people seem to have forgotten. It's like the way they construct the songs in the 20s, they would have two verses, a chorus, and... A lot of people forgot the second verse, but a lot of people did the first verse then, and they were constructing the songs. In the 30s, the big bands came in, so the orchestra would play the song as an instrumental, then you'd have a vocal refrain, which would only be the chorus. So people tended to forget the verses after all those years. I like to bring those back. I'll use both verses if they're good ones. If the second one's not good, I'll just do the first one. Mm-hmm. But it's just fun to play, like to start out and do this, start out with a verse that people said, "What's this song? What's this song?" And then you go to the chorus, they go, "Oh yeah, I've heard that one."
Right. It sounds like you must have done some research, I mean, on all of these songs, but to find forgotten verses, like, how does even a process like that start? Like,
oh,
where do you look first?
Well, I've got, you know, 78 record collection. I like to hear it, but if I really like a song, I'll seek out the piece of sheet music from the 20s, which I can easily find fairly cheap, and that's how you learn your verses. Mm-hmm. And I have a pretty good collection of that stuff. And an interesting thing about the 20s sheet music is, like, most of them had U chords with it. They have a piano score, then U chords over it. And the person who was responsible for that was May Singhai Breen, who was a historical figure, a woman. They called her the ukulele lady. And she's the one that influenced the publishers to put the U chords in there. She also had it out with the musicians union. She was playing, and she wanted to join the musicians union in New York City. And they said, well, the ukulele is not a legitimate instrument. And she fought it out with them and established that it was a legitimate instrument.
Wow, that's a pretty good accomplishment.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, so you've been into it for a while, obviously, but I don't know, it kind of seems like, have you noticed an increase in interest in kind of the old-time uke recently? I know you were at a uke event relatively recently.
Yeah, especially about 10 years ago, it seemed to peak this real big interest in a revival of interest in the uke, and everybody was into it, and I think, like most things, I think interest has peaked, and now it's waning, but I'm still doing it, and people are still interested. I've been wanting all these years to, I've done blues CDs and stuff, and I've always wanted to do a uke project, and a lot of people, I don't know, a lot of people say no, I don't like the uke. I said, oh, I got a new uke album, oh, no. So people either love the uke or they don't, and somehow it spoke to me, I like the uke, and I've been wanting to do a project all these years, and I've done time I've been on compilations, and I've added uke songs on most of my CD releases, a few, but I wanted to do like one whole project just of uke stuff. So the way I did this, instead of going into the studio and doing a project, I collected different uke things from different years. A lot of it's live from different venues, and just made my own compilation here of 20 pieces on the uke, most of them from pre-1928. So it has varying recording qualities. Some of them are like home recordings. I did, you know, pretty bare bones. Some of them are in front of a live audience. Some of them are outtakes of projects I did in the studio of stuff that never got released on the uke. But it all fit together pretty well. I've worked on it for a while. So the first cut I did was from 1987, way back then.
Wow.
And it goes from 1987 to 2017, just a few years ago. So spans a lot of years here. The first song I opened with was the earliest one I did in 1987. It's the Crazy Blues. Recorded live at the Festival for the Eno in Durham, which is a festival I do, I've done every year since 1980 in Durham, and it's always on the 4th of July. And this, they did a cassette release, oh, back in the 80s of Best of Festival for the Eno. This song was on it, Crazy Blues. They said they had enough guitar players, that's why they used the uke with it. Mm-hmm. But that's what I started with, and Crazy Blues is an interesting piece because it's the first recorded blues song from 1920. You had some blues before that, but it wasn't authentic blues. This was a song that was written by a black songwriter, performed by a black artist, who was Mamie Smith and her band, the Jazz Hounds. So I'm doing a ukulele version of Crazy Blues.
So it wasn't first recorded on the uke?
No, it wasn't.
How did they record it?
They had a band, like mm-hmm. a jazz band, kind of with horns and stuff, and drums, and a female vocalist, kind of like Bessie Smith type sound. But I did hear a uke version of it. There was an obscure duet from the 1920s called Salt and Pepper, and I heard that back in the 80s on a 78. I said, wow, crazy blues on the uke, and it just... gave me the idea to try to do that.
Yeah.
Pick another one.
All right, I mean...
I'll tell you about it.
Oh, well, yeah, let's go to Fooling Around. I mean,
Fooling Around, that's what I call the CD. Fooling Around is a very obscure song. I've never heard anybody else cover this song. I did... Actually, that group that I told you about that did the uke version of Crazy Blues, Salt and Pepper, did a version of it. But it's written by Carson Robison very early in his career, like 1924. And you could tell it's a young man because it's from a young man's perspective. I'm fooling around and nothing gets me down type of thing. Mm-hmm. I've never heard anybody else do this song, so I'm really glad to introduce this song into the public's consciousness.
Yeah, I mean, I've been listening to this CD riding around in the car, and it's really soothing. I think the instrument is just such a, I don't know, it doesn't sound quite like anything else, and it's nice to the ear, it really is. The Crazy Words, Crazy Tune song, that's a pretty interesting one.
Yeah, it is. It's what I call the anti-uke song.
Right.
It's like the uke was such a craze, everybody was doing the uke, and it didn't please everyone. Whoever wrote that song was pretty sick of hearing the uke, and did a satirical song about a neighbor that keeps him up all night playing the uke and hollering, vote do-de-o-do. So that's a fun song to sing.
So was that one, was the person that was kind of mocking the uke, did he write it for the uke, or did he play it on a different instrument? Or she?
Oh... whatever. I've heard verses of the uke and some without. I mean, jazz bands did it too.
Oh, really?
The subtitle of that is also called Washington at Valley Forge, which is a verse that I don't do. The version I like the best was done by Frank Crummett, who was a uke player in the 20s, and deals more with the disgust with the ukulele. Or is the Washington Valley Forge line that some people do. Art Fowler does that version. The Jim Queskin Jug Band does that version. It just didn't fit as well for me.
Yeah, I love the version that's on there. I mean, it's pretty hilarious, the little vocal is
vote do do do.
Yeah. It's catchy for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And the Drizzlin' Rain song, I mean, that one.
Oh, no, that's a more modern song. That's really? That one's interesting. That one came from the 1950s, and I've never heard many people cover that one. I think it's a beautiful melody. And it was recorded in Chapel Hill, North Carolina in the 50s by a woman named Syl Turner. Syl is short for Lucille. Syl Turner was... a 60-year-old white woman from Lynchburg, Virginia, but she sang songs kind of in a black dialect and had been doing that since the 30s, and she was kind of a society kind of woman, doing these interesting folk-type songs. And she wrote Drizzlin' Rain and recorded it at Chapel Hill in the late 50s, and... you know, it's on the small label, Colonial Records. But it just knocked me out the first time I ever heard that song. And I figured out a way to do it on the uke. And I said, man, this arrangement, which I think the arrangement was done by Joe Tanner, who did a lot of arrangements for the artists on Colonial Records. I said, he's bound to have done a uke because it just fits. Like, do-do-do-do-do-do. Just fits the uke so well.
It really does. That one's, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I feel like
I need to come up with a word other than soothing to describe the uke and the way you play it. But
so that song's pretty soothing.
It really is. It really is.
And I'm using the larger tenor ukulele for that, which I tune low. So that's the mellowest instrument I've ever tried to play.
So, well, that's kind of an interesting thing. I mean, of course, you probably played different ukes on a lot.
Am on this whole thing. Like some of it, I've played mostly. The main one is the smallest one, the soprano uke, and I prefer Martins. Mm-hmm. But on some of them, I play in the banjo uke.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, waiting for the evening mail. A few of them, I'm doing the tenor uke, which I tune lower like a baritone uke, but with the reentrant string. Like Give Me a Night in June, Drizzling Rain. And then a couple I'm playing the tipple, which is a 10-string instrument with metal strings tuned in choruses. It's tuned like a uke. You play it like a uke, but it's metal strings. You know, it'd be like the equivalent of a 12-string guitar sound or something.
Wow.
So that's on a few of these, too. Eliza and Bye Bye Blackbird.
Yeah, that's a really good one, too. I like that one. But I guess just to kind of keep it in order, I mean, Crying for the Carolines, that's a really beautiful one about place and, you know.
Yeah, I like that one, too. That one is from 1930. And so it's more recent than some of the older ones on here. It's come from the teens or 20s. Recorded that one live at Augusta Heritage Center in Elkin, West Virginia, in our concert. So that was at a more concert setting.
How'd you come across that song?
Oh, well, that one tells a story of a guy that, he left North Carolina, he moved to the big city. Big town, you lured me. Big town, you cured me. How it starts. And somebody that's really blue to go back where you can hear birds and stuff and see greenery. I can't remember where I first heard that. It got recorded by a lot of people. It was came into existence in 1930. So it's a little later than some of the other songs on the collection. There's a really cool animated a little short of it that you can see on YouTube of a man doing it on a big Wurlitzer organ.
Yeah, that's a really cool video. Early animation.
It's Schlesinger. I think he worked for some of the cartoons and stuff later. Mm-hmm. But it's a real early music video. Mm-hmm. Probably one of the first.
It's a beautiful song. That version sounds right different than the one on the album. So we'll link to that YouTube video Lightning's talking about in the description so you can listen to that too if you'd like to.
Yeah. Great.
Compare and contrast, but there's one that's from on the radio, the dude, you hear the dude's voice.
Oh, that, you know who that dude is? That's the famous Paul Brown.
Really?
Paul Brown is a really excellent old-time banjo player, but he worked for years on the NPR on the radio. He used to do the news. There's news with Paul Brown. He's living in D.C. then, but he's moved back to Winston-Salem now, and he had a radio show. And he has that nice radio voice, and I recorded that for his radio show across the Blue Ridge. And yeah, I wanted to leave him on there because he's been a good supporter of me.
Yeah, it's nice. I mean, the complimentary audio that's on this album that isn't just the playing. I mean, you included a couple. Which one did you tell the bit about your theory for why the uke was so popular? That's a funny one.
Let's see. I think that was 12th Street Rag. The second cut, that was done in front of a small live audience in Camden, South Carolina, as part of their Down Home Blues Festival. I was playing in like a library or a coffee house, I can't remember. But I had a small audience there, and I bring that up sometimes. It's kind of just a theory why the uke was popular in the 20s. And I hold up a uke case. I say, look at the size of a uke case. As I said, remember, the 20s was the decade of prohibition. There was a lot of drinking going on anyhow. And they had to smuggle it, though.
Right, and a case about the size of a liquor bottle.
Yeah.
We'll find something better than that. This Never Swat a Fly song, I feel like that's one that I had heard you play throughout the years.
I've been doing that one a long time. That also came from 1930, which actually I consider 1930, you know, a more recent song as far as this Hugh stuff, because most of it's like so early.
Right.
But Never Swat a Fly actually came from a movie. And the movie is called Just Imagine, and it was a pretty corny 1930s sci-fi spoof type movie. So these couple sings it on, they're on a rocket ship, and they sing Never Swat a Fly. You can look it up on YouTube. Wow. It's pretty hilarious.
Yeah, that sounds like it's worth seeing.
But the first time I ever heard it was like in the 60s. I heard it from Jim Queskin Jug Band did a version of it. They didn't do the verse, but I first heard it then.
Over the Rainbow, that one's instrumental, isn't it?
Yeah, I do that one on the tenor uke as an instrumental. And there's a nice YouTube of that. You can see it. I did it live at Port Townsend one afternoon, and I was having a nice day, and I did that. But when I went to Hawaii, Izzy, I can't say his last name, the big 700-pound guy that played the ukulele, and his big hit was Over the Rainbow, and I'd never heard him, but I bought his album. And I said, he does Somewhere to Everybody. I hope he doesn't do his version like me, because I've worked harder than doing this instrumental version. Mm-hmm. And then when I heard Izzy's version, I said, oh, no, he didn't do it at all. It's his beautiful voice. I said, oh, I see why people love Izzy now. Because he just strums real simple, and his voice carries that song. And I went, oh,
right.
This is, you know, I became a big fan then.
Yeah, that's a beautiful one. Like, when I saw the title, I was like, oh, I'm familiar with this one. Like, everybody knows this song. But
yeah,
without the words, it's different. It's a different way to hear it. I mean, you really focus on the melodies, and it's nice. Bye Bye Blackbird, that one is obviously a pretty powerful, I guess. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a standard. Like I was talking about, a lot of people know, they know the chorus, but you don't hear the verses so much. And those are both really good choruses on that. I mean, verses on that song. Mm-hmm. And I did both of them because it kind of tells the story of, somebody having a hard time and longing for home and hoping things get better and stuff.
Mm-hmm. That's a relatable theme. Well, I really like 16. Oh, how she could play a ukulele.
Oh, yeah.
That one's just so fun to listen to.
Yeah, that's a fun song. Songs on the uke about the uke. Mm-hmm. I know a few. Ukulele Lady. Oh, she could play the ukulele. There's one called Ukulele Baby. But it's a little catchy song. My favorite version of that is by a guy named Johnny Marvin. And he's kind of forgotten today, but he was Mr. Uke back in the 20s. Of course, the king was Cliff Edwards' Ukulele Ike. He would have been like the Elvis and the uke in the 20s. He was tops, and people copied him a lot. Johnny Marvin, I'd say, was second, recorded a whole lot. He was from Oklahoma. He had a pleasant voice. He wasn't as flamboyant as ukulele Ike, but he was solid. And his version of that song, Oh, How She Could Play the Ukulele, it's him with the ukulele and a violin played. It's a really nice version.
Wow. Yeah, so I don't know. It seems like a lot of these songs from kind of the teens and 20s, were they usually just a ukulele and a singer? Or what is it? I mean, that's how it is on your album, but.
Right. No. A lot of Ukulele Ike's early stuff, it's just him and the ukulele. I mean, it's just his voice and the ukulele. Mm-hmm. Later on, he had ukulele like in his hot combination where he played with some horns and some really good jazz guys. Johnny Marvin started out just the voice and the uke, but then later on he developed like more playing with the orchestra back up and kind of got away from the uke. Frank Crummett, another one of my favorite Uke heroes from the 20s, he kind of had this formula of Uke and piano. So the piano would play, then he'd come in and do like a verse with the Uke, and then they'd kind of switch off that way. They kind of had a little formula for a while.
Yeah, that sounds nice.
What other ones? A lot of other ones, just voice and Uke.
It's a great combination, I think.
Yeah.
Just the Uke. I mean, it's has such a unique tone.
Well, you don't have the bottom, though. Like the bass, it's all treble kind of.
Right.
And then the old recordings, it's like, it's not a lot of people's favorite, but Ukulele Ike is this thing where he does his scat thing with his voice. And it's just a real high head voice thing where he's scat singing, kind of. Mm-hmm. And he did that in all his songs, and that was like his trademark, kind of. But since Ike was so popular and kind of king of the uke, like so many other ones that recorded did that too.
Yeah, that shows up on a little bit of your album, right?
I can't do that not high quite anymore.
Like him,
but. I'll whistle. I could do a lower scat thing sometimes, but no, whistling's more my thing.
Yeah,
I could have done it when I was younger, maybe. Of course, I could yodel higher when I was younger too.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, you can vocalize. We know that for sure. Well, were there any of these that I didn't directly ask you about that you would like to hit on specifically? I mean,
Shout on Harvest Moon.
Oh yeah,
I like that. I like them all, but that one's notable because it was written in 1910 by a woman, Nora Bays, and her partner Jack Norworth, and that was a huge hit, and people. People identify with that. They remember that. Not particularly the verse, which I like both verses of that too, which I'd use. I go back to the original sheet music, which says, I ain't had no lovin' in April, January, June, or July. And everybody I've ever heard do it, they're like, I ain't had no lovin' in January, February, June, or July. It kind of flows better, but the original was April. And I go back and do the original lyrics that way on that one.
That's interesting.
Well, Silas, this is our pilot episode, our first podcast, and I've had a good time talking with you today about this ukulele project, and I hope we can have some future podcasts. We've got a whole lot of musical things we can discover here.
Absolutely. It's been a real treat for me. I appreciate anybody tuning in, and hopefully y'all can hear us again real soon.
Responsibility don't mean a thing to me. It's just calamity. I can't do nothing for it. Ain't nothing worries me. Ain't nothing hurries me. I'm wild and fancy free. Having a wonderful time, just fooling around, fooling around, picking them up and laying them down. I even lost my memory, so I can say I'm conscience free. Got no sweetie, got no name, got no reference of where I came, but what I claim is far from fame. While I'm fooling around, I said, all the time fooling around. Sometimes flush and sometimes flat, nothing on my mind but this old straw hat. No family tree, no pedigree, and I don't care nothing about nobody. When it blows and when it snows, I travel where the climate's gonna suit my clothes. Gonna shuffle my feet where the green grass grows. then I started fooling around, just fooling around, fooling around. Sometimes up and sometimes down. No one to tell me when or why. No one, no knots I can untie. I like lilies best on land, but I can't use them in my hand. I want both feet at my command. While I'm fooling around, hey, hey, all the time fooling around.